You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
1 minute I was walking out of the cave and the next minute the world just kind of went mad. And I had some inkling that some rocks had moved and it was all going horribly wrong.
In November of 2021, George Linane was exploring a cave in Wales with his friends Melissa Bell and Mark Berkey.
We went into the cave about 10:30. We took some photos because it's all quite pretty. Continued on and explored all of the passages of that area of the cave. And we had one final area left to have a look at.
They were inside what's known as the Cave of the Black Spring. It's the deepest cave in the UK. All three of them are experienced cavers, and Mark Berkey had been inside this cave many times before.
So I'd gone first, went down the bottom of a boulder slope, and I was continuing along the passage, and I heard this immense rumble of rockfall, and I heard Mel shout out, and I thought it was Mel that had hurt herself, so I spun around. And started heading back towards Mel and George. And there was now a hole in the floor that hadn't been there previously. And Mel was shouting to me, saying, "It's not me, it's George."
I remember my legs kind of whirling around in midair. And I remember trying to climb up whatever was in front of me with my arms. And then it all went very dark. A couple of minutes went past. I couldn't have told you if it was a couple of minutes or a couple of hours, but apparently it was a couple of minutes. And I kind of groggily came around and I could hear Mark shouting my name.
We were both shouting for George and there was no response at all. We couldn't see his headlight. We couldn't see George himself. And it was kind of the longest couple of minutes ever, just peering down this dark void and not knowing whether he was alive or dead at the time. After a couple of minutes, George groaned, so we knew that he was at least alive at that point.
Were you able to kind of look up and get a sense of how far you had fallen or how hard it was going to be to get someone to you?
No, I had absolutely no idea. I was lying on my front and my world ended about 2 inches in front of my face. I could see the floor and that was about it. I was struggling to move anything. I was able to move my arms, so I could put my arms out to my left and out to my right, and I kind of gathered that I was in the bottom of a rift, because I could feel a wall on my left and feel a wall on my right, just about. But I couldn't kind of see back to where I'd come from.
Did you know that you were hurt badly?
Yeah. That was fairly obvious as soon as I tried to move.
When the floor collapsed beneath him, George had fallen more than two stories. His leg was broken, his jaw too. He was missing teeth and had pain in his chest. Mark knew that George was in shock and that he needed to go for help.
And I think I told him to hurry up. and he left Mel where she was. She was essentially trapped above me, not daring to move a muscle in case she caused more rocks to fall on me.
Were you two talking to each other?
Yes, she she wouldn't stop talking, which was important in a way. It was important. She was basically trying to keep me conscious and to get me to keep sort of moving things to keep whatever blood flow going. So yeah, she talked to me pretty much nonstop for about 3 hours. She kept going and going and going. Basically talked about everything, I think, you know, life, partners, dogs, jobs, whatever. Just in an attempt to sort of keep me conscious and with it. I kind of flip-flopped between two mental states. I tried to stay positive, and you know, I was like, right, I'm gonna talk to Mel. I'm gonna stay conscious, but that was really, really hard to do at that point. I'd kind of do it for a little while and then think, oh, do you know what? This is too hard. I don't know if I'm gonna make it. I think I'm just gonna close my eyes and drift off for a bit, and whatever will be. You know. So yeah, like it was a pretty dark few hours. I'm not gonna lie.
As George lay in the cave, talking to Melissa up above him, Mark was making his way back to the surface. It took him about an hour. But when someone gets injured inside a cave, it isn't like any emergency responder can come and help rescue them. It's only other people who explore caves who can get them out. I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Love. Steve Thomas lives about 20 miles from the Cave of the Black Spring and was one of the first people to come and help after George's accident. He's been a member of his local cave rescue team for the past 30 years. How often are you called to rescue someone in a cave?
It's probably important to understand what a rescue can involve, because sometimes it's simply somebody's lost. Because caves can be quite complicated, and if you miss a certain feature, you've missed that turning or that little climb or wherever it was. So people can get lost, especially if they're not familiar with the cave. Sometimes, very occasionally, people are just exhausted, you know, especially if they weren't quite prepared for it, if they weren't aware of what a cave trip would involve, and they're just tired. So we've just got to go in and, you know, get their enthusiasm up and make sure they can get out. In terms of accidents, it's quite a rare thing. It's not a regular occurrence. It's usually, if there is an accident, it's somebody's twisted an ankle or something like that, or they've slipped and banged themselves into a rock and they've just knocked the wind out of themselves. But it's not that common compared to how many trips are made each year.
It's estimated that there are about 4,000 regular cavers in the UK today. Caving, which is also called spelunking in the United States, became popular in the UK after the end of World War II.
The places don't change, so you're looking at passages that haven't changed in thousands and thousands of years, and there's a real spirit of adventure you feel as well. You know, you might not be the first person in that particular cave, but if you've never been in there before, you are exploring it for yourself.
In 1959, a 20-year-old British college student got stuck in a narrow, unexplored passageway of a cave. He died from carbon dioxide poisoning before he was able to be rescued. Cavers recognized that as their sport grew, they needed to create their own safety networks. There are now at least 16 cave rescue groups made up entirely of volunteers across the UK. But when Steve heard about George's accident, he knew it wouldn't be a simple rescue. Because of his injuries, George couldn't walk. He'd need to be carried out on a stretcher. The Cave of the Black Spring has three entrances, and one that a stretcher would fit through was miles away.
So he knew straight away it was going to be a major rescue.
We'll be right back. Support for This Is Love comes from Shopify. If you've ever had a dream of starting your own business, Shopify can be a great place to start. Shopify is an online platform that lets you sell things online and in person, and makes it incredibly easy to accept all kinds of different payment methods, figure out how to charge taxes, how to charge shipping, and get detailed, top-down views on how your sales are going. Some of your favorite brands already rely on Shopify to power their online shops, like Rothy's, Brooklinen, and Allbirds. But you don't need to be well-established to use Shopify. They'll help you at every stage of your business and have tools to help people who are just starting out, like their AI-powered tool, Shopify Magic, or their built-in marketing tools that can help you create and analyze campaigns. Shopify grows with your business, no matter how far or big you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/thisislove, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/thisislove now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/thisislove. Support for This Is Love comes from Quince. Lately, I've been less interested in having a lot of clothes and more interested in having fewer things that are well-made and will last me a long time. Quince offers well-made clothing like corduroy pants, 100% organic cotton fisherman crew sweaters, and really beautiful cashmere at a more reasonable price. Quince's items cost 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They partner directly with top factories and, according to Quince, only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. One of the things I got was a denim button-down shirt that has hundreds of great reviews. It comes in denim and chambray, feels very soft, and looks great. I also ordered their best-selling cashmere trouser sock in a few colors and even gave a pair to my mother. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/thisislove for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/thisislove to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thisislove. It was Saturday afternoon when Dr. Rebecca Specht got a text message that there'd been an accident at the Cave of the Black Spring.
When I initially saw the text, it was easy to respond and say my availability. But then when I was called and asked to go underground, my initial thought was, I don't think I can do this.
Rebecca hadn't been caving for a while. She'd been recovering from long COVID for about a year and had given birth to a baby 3 months earlier. She says she hadn't been away from her baby for more than an hour.
But I thought about it and I realized that the whole point of me being in Cave Rescue is to be able to help in these kind of situations.
Rebecca and her husband, also a member of the Cave Rescue team, quickly loaded up their two children. She was the first doctor to arrive that day. She and two other cave rescuers entered the cave through the same entrance that George had, the one that would be too difficult to bring him out of.
It's quite a narrow entrance, and it starts off by descending into a vertical pipe. So they've put some man-made pipe into the cave there in order to kind of hold the earth back and for you to be able to get into that section of the cave. And what they've used is some sewage pipe, essentially, and that pretty much sets the tone for what's to come. Because following that, it's a lot of narrow passageway, a lot of crawling, and by crawling, some of it's crawling on your hands and knees, but a lot of it is commando crawling, and some of it narrow enough that you can't lift your face up from the floor to see where you're going. So you're commando crawling blind, essentially, through mud and through wet passages.
Rebecca got to George around 7:30 at night, When she arrived, he was having trouble breathing, and she suspected that he was bleeding internally.
There's actually very little we could do to stop that underground, and so that could have potentially been life-threatening for him. And during that initial few hours, I wasn't sure if he was going to survive his injuries. I felt the weight of responsibility being the only professional medical person there. I was acutely aware of the fact that there was a significant chance that he might deteriorate, and that if he did, everybody would be looking to me to do something about it. And actually, there's a limit to what we're able to do underground because of the logistics and the equipment and the things that we have available to us. So yeah, I was very aware of needing to be focused and go through things in a systematic way, and not allowing myself to feel scared or overwhelmed by the situation.
More local cavers began arriving at the cave. They started taking supplies through the steep passageways down to George. Oxygen, medicines, a stretcher, ropes. It was Saturday evening, hours since George fell. Rebecca and rescuers like Steve Thomas were getting George ready to be carried out.
That was logistically really challenging because we needed 8 of us to lift him safely. We couldn't rule out that he'd had a spinal injury, so we needed to be really careful about the way that we lifted him. And there really wasn't enough space to fit anywhere near that number of people in there. So we had rescuers kind of clambering over one another, sitting in each other's laps, all kind of straddled over each other just to try and get the hands in that we needed to try and lift him as safely as we could, and also to try and minimize the amount of pain that it caused George. And that was one of the points where I think he really was struggling. He was screaming and crying out in pain, and that was quite hard to hear.
And then he was maneuvered through passages, all quite small, and up pitches, through a little chamber, and then down another pitch to get to where he needed to be, where we'd built this tent for him. But that, just doing that operation, took, I think, 11 hours. It was a major undertaking just to get him to that point.
Was he talking? What was he saying? What was it like? Did you talk to him?
Yeah, when we'd be bringing him down, I was quite close to him. In fact, I had the honour of being thrown up on by him. I spoke to him a bit, but he wasn't really with it. He was a little bit delirious. But you could see his strength of character, despite everything he was going through. Even if you try to crack a joke or something to just keep him with you. And he didn't find anything particularly funny, I don't think, but he was kind enough to sort of raise half a smile. So, he was still showing himself to be a strong character.
It wasn't safe for the volunteers to be down in the cave for more than a few hours. It was cold and wet. They were worried about hypothermia and exhaustion. They needed more help. So they put out a call across the entire country.
This doesn't happen often, but it happens every few years. If you have a really big rescue, they need the extra manpower.
Martin Grass, who lives several hours away, got one of the calls. He brought more than 30 cavers in a caravan to come help George. Once they arrived at the Cave of the Black Spring, they began working in shifts, alongside volunteers from other parts of the country, setting up rigging to haul George's stretcher up through the cave. Martin was getting updates from down below.
We were getting these messages saying, well, they've had to stop for another 30 minutes, and then the 30 minutes became 40, and then all they've stopped, it's actually an hour because they're trying to give him this and they're trying to give that intravenously. It was a concern that, he might not pull through. But everybody just kept fighting through it. You don't, although it's at the back of your mind, most people aren't thinking about that. They're just thinking, we've got to get him out.
We'll be right back. Support for This Is Love comes from Indeed. Indeed is a matching and hiring platform with a matching engine built to help you find quality candidates fast. According to a recent Indeed survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Indeed leverages more than 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. That way, their matching engine is constantly learning to find you the right candidate. You can get unparalleled access to job seekers with more than 350 million monthly unique visitors globally and an extended reach through Glassdoor. All of this means you can cut down on the time you spend looking for the perfect candidate and spend that time focusing on everything else that's on your plate. Listeners of This Is Love can get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ThisIsLove. Go to Indeed.com/ThisIsLove right now and say you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/ThisIsLove. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You might need Indeed.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
George's rescue continued on through Sunday. 24 hours had passed since his fall, and volunteers were very slowly getting him closer to the surface.
There's parts of the cave where there are vertical pitches, so like places where people would need to climb vertically, and for those the stretcher was attached to ropes and hauled up. There were sections of the cave that were, depending on the shape of the cave at that point, the stretcher had to be maneuvered into different positions. So points where he had to be, the stretcher had to be tipped up on its side to fit him around things, or where he had to be tilted, either with his head up or head down in order to get him underneath rocks, over rocks, around corners, through passages. And there's an underground river inside the cave as well. So there was a section where an inflatable addition to the stretcher was attached so that he could be partially floated along the river as people carried and passed the stretcher through.
You have to go upstream against the water flow, which is okay as long as it's not too high. But the floor is peppered with potholes, very deep potholes. So you take one step and you just disappear out of depth underwater. So it all has to be managed very carefully.
People actually lay down in the stream or stood in gaps in the rocks so that the stretcher could be slid over their backs in order to support him.
And it was remarkable because the cave was just lined with people. Yeah, every section of the cave was ready to receive him well before he got there. Areas were being rigged where perhaps a rope was needed to haul up a bit or just to put a safety line on him. Everything was being prepared for him way before he got there.
George says there are parts of his rescue that he doesn't remember. But by Sunday evening, he says he started to become more aware of what was happening around him and who was around him.
When I came around, I noticed the person whose face I could sort of immediately see above the stretcher was a relatively new friend of mine, Jan from Gloucester, And, you know, time went on, and as we got down to the streamway, there was another change of personnel, and these people were from the Mendip Hills, which is Somerset, which is another area again, and then Yorkshire, and then the Peak District. And it just, as the rescue went on, it became increasingly obvious to me that people were coming from all over the country to help rescue me.
Volunteers also came to help at the surface. A group of cavers got to work cooking. They're called the Soup Dragons, after a soup-making dragon from a 1970s British kids' TV show.
And they just went into action, and I don't know how they did it, but whenever you came out of the cave, somebody thrust a plate of hot food and a hot drink into your hand, and all you could see was cars everywhere. It was incredible.
They just kept coming?
They did. Boss, you know, the call went out, and people responded. We all look after each other. So if somebody's in trouble, we all know that we're the only ones who can get them out. So we'll inevitably respond. It doesn't matter how far people had to come, they came. I felt quite small fry because I'd only had to travel about 20 miles to get there. You know, as people had driven like through the night to get there, it was incredible.
Who are people that are cavers? I mean, who does this? This is a very, in some ways, tight-knit group, even though you're from all over.
It is tight-knit. I always say it's a real mix of people from cavers I know. I don't really know what they do for a job. They never seem to have very much money. They've got a beat-up old car. Right up to caving with doctors, lawyers, you know, people with money. So you get a real mix, but caving brings everybody down to their own level. But yeah, it's a very close-knit community.
George's rescue was still going on after 48 hours, and it's estimated that between 250 and 300 people had shown up to help him. Here's George.
Towards the end of the rescue, when we were on what I would call the home straight, there were a lot of people around, and as we got to the exit, I was aware of there being a lot of people around, and it was also the same thing that I notice at the end of every caving trip I've ever done. You can smell the outside when you get close to the exit. You can smell. I don't know how to describe it. It's quite often. I mean, the UK is quite wet, right? We're famous for having a not the greatest climate in the world. So quite often you can smell a bit of rain. You know, you can smell leaves, and just the fresh air from outdoors just smells that little bit different.
What was the moment like when he actually emerged from the cave?
Well, when he came out of the cave, it was a brilliant moment. It was absolutely amazing.
Steve Thomas.
The entrance itself is in the side of a mountain, and I'm eternally grateful for this, but I just, through chance, happened to be the person who was on the head of the stretcher as he came through the entrance. And the entrance is only a 2 foot wide, 2 foot by 2 foot, not even that probably, a square hole with a gate on it, which we've put on in to keep children or sheep or anything out of the cave. It's for, you know, safety. And as he came through that hole, I just happened to be the one who was on the stretcher right next to his head. And as his head came through, I just leaned down to him and said, "You're out of the cave, George." And so we just erupted. We never cheer or applaud or anything after a rescue. We've never done it, but we did this time. The hillside was just full of lights from the cavers, and we were just all cheering. It was amazing, absolutely amazing.
How long did it actually take to get him out?
I'm told it was 54 hours, but none of us were timing it. But it feels about right, 54 hours. Yeah, it's certainly. I'm told it's the longest UK cave rescue in history, and I can believe that. It certainly felt like it.
George spent 16 days in the hospital, where his partner, Julie, was by his side. His injuries included a broken leg and broken jaw, broken ribs, a dislocated collarbone, and a lacerated spleen, which had been the cause of his internal bleeding.
And my lungs weren't too impressed either. Apparently there was some air and some blood where it shouldn't have been.
When you realized, you know, when you were still down there and you realized that you were seeing people from all over the country there, how did that feel?
Initially, an amount of guilt, to be honest. I thought, you know, I've caused a major problem here, and people are having to come from all over the UK to basically dig me out of it. But that was a fleeting feeling, and it was followed by an overwhelming feeling of gratitude. It was a pretty amazing thing that happened that weekend. I just felt incredibly grateful to them for saving me. I felt incredibly lucky to be alive. I felt incredibly, incredibly lucky to still be able to walk and to still have two legs. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we've talked to other people who were with you in the cave. Everyone seems to say, well, that's just what you do as a caver. You help other cavers. You know, no one seems to be saying, well, yeah, you know, I thought I'd do something nice. It just seems to be a given in this community.
Well, yeah. You know, ultimately, the only people that can rescue cavers are other cavers. They're the only people who have the skills to safely go into a cave and even look after themselves, let alone rescue somebody else. You know, the police can't do it. The fire service can't do it. When it comes to being inside a cave, it's cave rescue or nothing. So we say cavers rescue cavers because it's only cavers that can rescue cavers.
George says his injuries have mostly healed. He started caving again, and he's become a provisional member of his local cave rescue team. He'll train alongside some of the same people who rescued him, like Steve Thomas and Rebecca Specht, whose older son still talks about George's rescue.
For a few months afterwards, actually, when we talked to him about what bedtime story would you like tonight, he would often say, I want the story of Paulie George and the cave and the cave rescue team. And so we'd tell the story to him about all the people who came to help George.
We all understand what caving is about. And we all know that things happen. It's just one of those things that happens. And George was the unlucky one that day. It could have been any one of us if we'd been going along that passage on a different day. It could have been any one of us. So nobody holds George responsible. We'll never stop ribbing him about it, ever. He will never hear the end of it, you know, especially if we've had a beer or two. But nobody will ever hold him responsible or resent the fact that we had to go and rescue him. Never.
This Is Love is created by Lauren Spohr and me. Nadia Wilson is our senior producer. Katie Bishop is our supervising producer. Our producers are Susanna Robertson, Jackie Sajiko, Libby Foster, and Samantha Brown. Our technical director is Rob Byers. Engineering by Russ Henry. Learn more about the show on our website, thisislovepodcast.com. And if you like the show, tell a friend or leave us a review. It means a lot. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at This Is Love Show. And we're also on TikTok at @criminal_podcast, where we post a lot of behind-the-scenes content of both shows. This Is Love is recorded in the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. We're part of the Vox Media Podcast Network. Discover more great shows at podcasts.voxmedia.com. I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Love.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.